ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failure to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I would remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the meeting by hanging up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, use the instant messaging facility to indicate you wish to speak, and I will bring in members as listed. Members should ensure their cameras are switched on when speaking. Cameras should also be switched on when a vote is being taken. I would remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Type Q if you wish to ask a question, type P if you wish to propose, type S if you wish to second. Please refrain from making any other comments using instant messaging. In the event the two councillors propose at the same time, the person who proposed first will be taken as the proposer and the person who proposed second will be recorded as the seconder. Item one is apologies and chairman's remarks. Do we have any apologies? No. Okay. Chairman's remarks. I just want to briefly thank Mr. Mallon for the letter he sent to Malachy's Primary School. I know it was very well received by the school. And also just again to pass remark that we are in unprecedented times. I'm here and everyone else is elsewhere. And I've had a full day of homeschooling. So I'm not sure how your day is going, but ERT is probably going to be an improvement for me. Declarations of interest. Item number two is declarations of interest. Any interest to declare? No. Okay. Then moving on to the action sheet. Dermot, you have a queue in there. Is that in regards to the action sheet, Councillor Curran?
It's in regards to the action sheet, so it is.
Okay. Well, if we go through it page by page, Councillor Curran, and then we can maybe take in. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay, yeah.
Okay, so going through the action sheet, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6. Councillor Curran, do you want to come in for a question and then we'll take a proposal and seconder, I think? That's the way to do it.
It's the very last item on the action sheet. So it's an update on the Irish State Car Park in Downpatrick. And I had a lot, we had a number of meetings about this and there was no update on this at all. And at the last meeting of the ERT committee, you might say I had a request then that this takes place, so this meeting in the January meeting they got there. And I want to thank Mr. Conor Mallon for his help and assistance here in getting this on, because it wasn't on the action sheet in the very first time that the action sheet came out. But I'm looking forward to what I'm going to hear from Mr. Mallon does give me a verbal update on this. And see, because we want to know, this is a very important issue in relation to the public, and we want to see it moving forward. And there was no update up onto hope this evening, and from that then, we maybe see how we're going to move forward together, and what action can be taken, and when will the next meeting be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Curran. Mr. Mallon?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Councillor, for the question. We share your sort of frustrations around the speed that this project's moving. And we acknowledge that the self-market test exercise has been completed for some time. We have been seeking a meeting with DFC officials since before Christmas to allow me to provide a written update to this committee. However, we weren't able to secure that meeting pre-Christmas. However, we have secured a meeting this Thursday with senior officials within DFC where they're going to come to discuss with us the proposed development brief for the project, and given us a timeline for the completion of that development brief on a date for the next meeting, which I hope will be at the end of this month, if not early February. So I hope that update provides you with some reassurance that we are moving ahead with the project.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen.
I do thank you for that very, very much. So we'll get there. In an update, will we have any information coming back from the soft access, the soft working group exercise that we did in relation to finding out interested personnel that would be coming to Downpatrick? Would that information be given to us?
Yes, that information will be forthcoming as well.
Okay, I welcome that. And thanks very much, sir. And thank you again, Mr. Mallon, for doing that.
Okay, thank you. So, do we need, Mr. Mann, do we need a proposal and signature for the action sheet, or is that just taken as?
I propose it.
Assuming there's no further matters arising, I think we could take that.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, moving on then. The next two items, item 4 and number 5, our notices of motion. So just I think what we'll do is we'll take in the respected councillors who have submitted the motions. After that, we'll invite council officers just to sort of augment some of the information regarding that, and then we'll open it up regarding sort of a wider discussion from the chamber. So the first notice of motion is item number 4, notice of motion, Ray, regarding the housing system, and I think we have Councillor Murphy. Councillor Murphy, I did see you were there somewhere, and I'd like you to welcome you to the ERT committee, and if you want to present said motion, Councillor Murphy.
Thanks very much, Andrew, and thanks for this opportunity to the committee. I'll just read this out. This council welcomes the recent announcement by the Communities Minister, Carlene Holland, regarding her plans to fundamentally address the significant challenges facing our housing system. We call on the planning services to urgently place more emphasis on planning as an activity that is both integrated with other local government agencies and is focused on delivery. So that's the motion. Andrew, if it's okay, could I just say a few words maybe? And
yes, please do. Yeah. No, I'd welcome that. Thank you, Councillor Murphy.
Thank you very much. Okay, so, Chair, you know, the background to this motion has been well rehearsed, both within the Council and in other fora. We all agree we have a housing crisis, and... Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I had a brief intermittent system down, one would assume, but I think you're back now, Councillor Murphy, if you want to continue, sorry.
This is the gods working against me, right?
Oh dear.
We see the need for the decisive action. That's why I fully support the Minister's plans to fundamentally address the significant challenges facing our housing system. However, one department alone is not going to be able to solve this problem. The gap between the number of houses we need and the number of houses we have is growing, as indicated by the most up-to-date housing executive figures. The waiting list for Newry alone is up by 600 since October 2020. 712 applications for one-bedroom accommodation only, 516 applications for two-bedroom accommodation only, and 171 applications for three-bedroom accommodation only. That is one short of 1,400 applications to the Housing Executive. But you need to multiply that to get the real figure for the families in housing stress in Newry. Despite the construction of some new housing developments, we are merely papering over the cracks of a dysfunctional housing system. Sinn Féin commends the work going into the local development plan, and we look forward to seeing what the enhanced support for the delivery of social housing actually entails. We also recognise that this council has assisted in delivering housing provision across the district. However, some of that good work for many on the waiting list, and many have been on the waiting list for well over, say, 5 to 10 years, pales into insignificance when they cannot see any light at the end of the tunnel. If we agree that this is a crisis, then we need to approach it as you would approach any crisis, with a radical plan. The announcement by the Minister is a step in the right direction. This Council needs to make sure that it does all it can within its power to provide opportunities and support for those vested with the duty to meet the housing need of people from the urban centres and rural settings. High quality, affordable housing is not only in the interest of people's basic human rights, but also ensures that people stay longer in the area, invest in their communities, and undoubtedly this will also encourage industry to come to our district. So that's why I'm asking people to support this motion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Murphy. I see Councillor Hart is in the meeting as well, and Councillor Hart seconded the motion. Do you have anything to add before I call in Mr. McKay, just to give us sort of a sort of augment us where we are within the council, Councillor Hart?
Thanks, Andy. I'd be delighted to second the motion and just say a few words on it. Adequate housing is universally viewed as one of the most basic of human rights. To have a roof over your head for human dignity, your mental health and an overall quality of life. In light of the recent announcement by Minister Ní Chulainn of the Department of Communities, now more than ever we need the housing sector, planners, etc. to work together to make a start to help tackle this housing crisis.
Okay, thank you, Councillor. Councillor Savage, as you end the question, I'm going to invite Mr. McKay in first, and then we'll open it up to the wider chamber, Councillor Savage. So, Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Chair. There's a short report tabled this evening, which hopefully everybody's had the chance to read. I mean, in essence, the planning department would fully support the motion and the sentiments expressed in it. I think Councillor Murphy made a very valid point in his opening remarks, and that the Department for Communities cannot do it all on its own. The Minister's statement, you know, it is an ambitious one. It is wide-ranging in its scope. And as I've said in the report, the planning department will play its part in helping to deliver on housing in its various forms across the district. What I would say is that the planning department, you know, in the years that it's been embedded in the council, has actually been quite active, along with a lot of other agencies in assisting in delivering social housing. You know, unfortunately, the planning department cannot do anything on its own. We in truth, we're just a facilitator, along with the other agencies. But through the development plan, you know, there is scope to build on the ambitions that the councillors have. Through our own community plan, there's important work to be done, and that's referenced in the report. And each and every day, as we deal with planning applications, there's a lot of interagency work going on in helping to progress those applications that involve social housing provision. Obviously, we can all do more, and we would like to do more, and hopefully the minister will be able to bring forward a reform that creates mechanisms that we can assist in delivering them. Happy to take any questions that members might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. McKay. Councillor Savage, you're in with a question. Councillor Savage?
Yeah, well, Chair, it's me a comment as well. Chair, it's just really to welcome the motion and congratulate Dagan on bringing it forward as somebody who has pushed hard along with other colleagues in the Chamber across all the parties to promote the issue of the housing need, dealing with the housing need crisis in the Greater Newry area. I welcome the motion. I welcome the move by the Minister. She's thinking outside the box. It is an ambitious plan, and hopefully we can get that joined up thinking it's badly needed. You know, I think our own council did take steps back from 2017, 2018 to start that whole, to start a precedent of collegiate approach to housing. I think our first housing needs conference was a great success.
I think we got a bit of joined up thinking out of that and the realisation that we had a crisis on our hands here and we all had to work together across the agencies to deliver on it. And I do welcome the efforts of Anthony's team in relation to the motion that we would put through that we would prioritise social housing within the planning system. That has happened, and I know there are a number of difficult big schemes coming our way in the Greater Newry area in the coming weeks, and there's been a lot of work done on that, but we need to move those on, and we need to get more schemes in the pipeline over the coming months. Just really to show the SDLP's SDLP's support for the motion, but also maybe to ask a question. Maybe Anthony, it's not you, maybe Connor or somebody can answer. We were supposed to look at a new conference this year, 2021, to follow up on the previous housing conference. And I know we have huge challenges, but and it may be something that we look at maybe towards the autumn or on an online capacity. But, you know, I think if we're passing this motion tonight, which I think we will do, we need to follow up on that and build on the good work that's already been done to date. So if it's some indication on that, really just to say the SDLP support the motion, and if we get some sort of heads up as to where we are with the second Housing Needs Conference. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Savage. Mr. Mallon and Mr. McKay, is that something that Mr. Mallon, are you happy to field that question?
Yeah, we're more than happy to follow up on that suggestion by Councillor Savage outside the meeting, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mallon. Thank you, Councillor Savage. Councillor Clark. Councillor Clark.
Yeah, Chair. Thanks very much. And I would like to thank Declan and Valerie for bringing the motion also. I think the Minister's reforms, the will transform social housing provision, particularly the issue about the housing executive building and homes. I think that'll be a seismic shift in being able to borrow and build homes. I think that will change the atmosphere in regards to building social housing as well. The figures are on the rise right across, and particularly in Newry is a high level of need. Also in regards to Newcastle would have a high need, and Moran Point would have a high need also. In Newcastle, we have a particular issue because most of the land that's been zoned for housing has already been developed. There is no provision left, and it's something I've raised with Anthony previously about what we do in the meantime from the development of the new plan and where we're at the minute. So I think there's difficulties, there's major difficulties there, and I know the housing associations have bought private developments, which is getting some small amounts of social housing in the Newcastle area, but there's a cat running across me. There's 200 families in social housing stress. And this is, when we talk about figures at times, you forget that this is individuals, it's families, it's at times families divided, not able to even live together as a family, and sometimes in really poor accommodation, you know. So and the lack of housing or the lack of stable housing has real damaging impacts on families and on young families and on children, even children's educational development, and unstable housing impacts their education also. So I think we do have to be mindful that it's more than just bricks and mortars. It's a family home. And I suppose it's compounded and sort of in parochial in my own areas. There's a lack of even private housing, you know. So at times it is a really chronic situation. It's one of the most talked about issues in my constituency offices. You know, anytime there's always every week there would be, you know, dozens of people contacting the office about social housing. So it's important we do, and the motion does that, along with the other work that we've done in regards to the symposium and maybe a future one. And about all community planning, by working together, we did do our asset review in regards to the different partners, what assets were available for development. Maybe we need to look at that again. You know, it seemed to be, it was particularly the council was offering up most of our assets, but I'm not sure how many other assets came from other social partners in regards to social housing. as well. So we'll maybe have to follow up in regards to, is there other assets within our social partners? And is there opportunities then to work in partnership for development? But no, I'm happy to support the motion. And this continues the momentum that we want to build moving forward. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Councillor Clark, and thank you, Kat. I hope they won't raise you a dog or a 6 or 8 year old. But thank you, Councillor. Councillor Tinley, if you're next.
Thank you, Chair, and I fully concur with previous speakers, and I thank Councillor Murphy for bringing this forward. It's hard to believe, Chair, it's 4 calendar years from the symposium in the Canal Court, and I mean, like, in a lot of ways, sometimes you think that we're going through the motions and this thing is forever on a hamster wheel of planning, but nothing ever comes out the other side of it. And I hope, and I have no doubt that Minister Nicholl has a plan here if she is intending to allow the executive to start and rebuild. No doubt she has planned this out about how exactly that's going to play out. The numbers of people in housing need and housing distress are absolutely shocking in this whole council area. And one of the things that isn't remarked upon, Chairman, too often is people put down an area of preference. And they're not, a lot of people don't add or don't put a particular place down for an area of preference because there's just no chance of them getting a house in that place. So those numbers for all those hotspots for Newry and Newcastle and Warren Point and so on are very, very conservative numbers, I would suggest to you. And Councillor Hart touched on it there. A basic human right, the ability to live with a roof safe and secure over your head. So I support Councillor Murphy on this. I think we have to keep the pressure on, and hopefully Councillor Savage had asked the details there about the symposium, the next one. But we need to start to turn the screw in this one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Tinley. Councillor Hannah.
Thanks, Chair. I would like to thank Declan and Valerie for bringing this motion forward. I've been pretty much on the same page as everyone that's spoken at the moment. And with the housing executive in particular changing, this is a major change, it is, in their attitude towards housing, because it had been left pretty much to housing associations and such to develop social housing. I actually think if the housing executive do actually start to do this and all the development takes place, I know in Mourne here, we are not just so bad, but Newry isn't great. I know Newcastle has problems, but Declan, thanks for bringing the motion forward, and us and the VUP will be supporting you. Thanks, Declan.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor McAteer.
Thank you, Chair. And again, certainly welcome the motion, but I do see some of the key issues in it as highlighted, and just draw people's attention to the fact that we need to have a lot of serious input in from all the departments in the Stormont Executive. When I read that the planning process, where the process of planned applications, the production of development plans, the development of policy and strategy is built around the engagement with stakeholders, we were dealt a very poor hand by the Stormont Executive when we received planning. We received the same amount of planning officers as some of the smaller councils in the north and are expected to deal with the same amount of applications. In fact, even more, second to Belfast, I think, and I'm sure Anthony will concur what I'm saying. So when we're talking here about motions coming in, we would need to get a serious amount of buy-in. We also need to have a serious look at where the development plan is going, because I think people noted at the last full council meeting where I had serious reservations and problems about when the development plan was going to be completed, and I'm sure it'll be quite the same for a lot of other councils, not until 2026 or 27. And, you know, if we're looking at a slower procedure, is that, you know, housing, real housing, won't be delivered. So it's fine bringing the motions, and but we've got to look and seriously address the key issues therein. And if those aren't addressed, then, you know, we're going to be, as the time was Jarlath said, we're going to be paddling away in 2027, 28 and 29, the same type of scenario as we're facing at the moment in terms of availability, etc. So that will be, while certainly, you know, back in the motion, I would call for a bit of reality in this, and the other executive partners to get on board as well in this, to make sure that this actually does come to fruition. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor McAteer. I don't see anybody else indicating to either question or comment on the matter, and I would like just to pass my comment on that, how worthwhile a motion this is, and, you know, being fully supportive of it, and also some of the wider issues raised about housing stock and housing symposiums. So if that's the case and everyone has spoken in support, I think we're all happy to proceed. So we don't, do we need to propose?
Sorry, would Mr. Councillor Murphy like to sum up?
Indeed, sorry, apologies. Thank you, Mr. Mallon. Councillor Murphy?
Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, no, I welcome all the comments and the positive support coming from, you know, both the planners, other colleagues and other parties as well. And no doubt, you know, some of the comments that have been made, you know, have to be taken on board as well. So, you know, thanks to everybody for their support.
Thank you. Okay, happy to move on, councillors. So the next item is another notice of motion. And in this regard, Councillor Enright, I will follow a similar format in that I'll ask Councillor Enright to present his motion, and then we'll it's Mr. Jackson coming in to sort of surmise the council, and then we'll open it up again. So Councillor Enright, if you're still there, thank you.
Yes, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Thanks, Chairperson. Well, the motion reads, this council calls upon Finance Minister Conor Murphy to immediately implement the NEDZEB building code, or nearly zero energy building code, that the EU directive requires the Northern Irish Department of Finance to implement by the end of, it's actually last year, Chairperson, at this stage. This directive has been adopted into UK law. The council alerts the minister to the following facts. One, the building code in Northern Ireland is 20 years behind GB. Every private sector house built between now and 2030 will have to be retrofitted to meet the UK's climate change energy efficiency targets for 2030 or 2050. Two, every new house built in the Republic of Ireland is now more than £1,000 cheaper per annum to run than an equivalent new house in Northern Ireland because of these out-of-date building standards. All new homes in the Republic of Ireland have a typical building energy rating of A2 or better. Three, in the Republic, in November 19, they signed into law the nearly zero energy buildings regulation under Part L of the building code for all domestic homes, not just public buildings as in GB. New public buildings in the Republic have been NEDZEB since the 31st of December 2018. Chairperson, this motion is about ending fuel poverty. It's about keeping millions of pounds per annum from flowing out of the Northern Irish economy in payments for fossil fuels. And it's about fighting climate change in a manner that helps keep money in the pockets of families across Northern Ireland. Chair, across Great Britain, four-fifths of properties will fail to meet the legally binding carbon target for 2030 or 2050. The equivalent figure in the Republic is two-thirds. All these properties will have to be part of a giant retrofitting program on a scale of expenditure that would be similar to that of the Second World War. In Northern Ireland, we have an even worse situation. Because Northern Ireland has failed to adopt and implement the last three versions of building code, we are still building uneconomic and out-of-date properties. We're approximately 15 to 20 years behind the Republic and Great Britain. This means that nearly every new build in 2021 in Northern Ireland will have to be retrofitted to meet UK-wide climate change targets. This makes no sense. In the UK as a whole, the nearly zero energy building code is now law, but the regulations to make it happen on the ground have not yet been issued by the Department of Finance in Northern Ireland. The Department of Finance have expressed a desire to skip all the building codes they've so far missed and just adopt the latest NEDZEB code to catch up with our neighbouring jurisdictions. But we're still waiting for it to happen. This puts our buildings even further behind and makes our climate change challenge much more difficult every day that passes. A family in a new house in the Republic of Ireland in euros will be 1,500 euros better off than a family in a new house in Northern Ireland, because they implemented the NEDZEB code in 2018 and 2019. In Northern Ireland, we still have not implemented the 2010 English code. I requested Council rights to Finance Minister Conor Murphy and asked him to immediately implement the NEDZEB code in Northern Ireland, which should have been placed at the end of last year. This will make thousands of families from all backgrounds in Northern Ireland better off every year and enable us to do something real against the runaway pace of climate change. And I'd also ask that the motion be copied to other councils, Chairperson.
Thank you, Councillor Enright. Mr. Jackson, if you want to sort of place the council's position, and then we can open up the discussion, the debate, slightly wider to the chamber. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Can you hear me okay, Chair?
Sorry, yes, I can. Yes, I can.
You can, thank you. Chair, Councillor Enright is correct in that the building regulations in Northern Ireland have fallen behind the UK and the Republic of Ireland in relation to conservation and fuel of power. Basically, our regulations should have been updated in 2014, but the minister in charge at that time decided against any upgrade of the regulations. However, I must point out to the committee that the department have advised us within Building Control that the minimum level of compliance with the NZEB requirements may be achieved by meeting the target emissions rate required under Regulation 40. So basically, those carrying out work should undertake an analysis of any technical, environment, economical feasibility of the use of high efficiency alternative systems based on energy from renewable sources, and take these into account as required by the Regulation 43A, which is the NZEB regulations. So basically, applicants must submit a target emissions rate for any building that they intend to erect and must have a pass rating when they take into consideration the renewable energies. Doesn't mean to say that they have to provide a renewable energy within their buildings, but they have to achieve a target rate so that Building Control can approve that application. And this does apply to all new buildings which are erected, and for all buildings which an application has been submitted to the Council after the 31st of December 2020, and that's until further notice. We are aware that the Department is already working to increase the standards required under Part F, which is the Conservation of Fuel and Power Regulations, and they intend to implement those as soon as possible. So basically, any new requirement would be expected to apply on the basis of the date of a building regulation application, and therefore not need to retrofit any application that's submitted now and that passes the TER/DER rating now. They will not need to be retrofitted. So the Department and the Minister are aware of the need to undertake a public consultation prior to the introduction of any amendments to the building regulations, and this will have an impact on the introduction date. So it's over to the committee at this stage to decide upon the notice of motion that Councillor Enright has put forward tonight.
I'll just invite Mr. Mallon in to just further augment the council position, and then we'll take it open to questions from the chamber. Thank you, Mr. Mallon.
Thanks, Chair. It's just for a bit of clarity around the record and for the record of the meeting, we would note that Councillor Brown proposed the motion in the absence of Councillor Enright at the last meeting. And I assume, Councillor Enright, you're happy to second the motion for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Mallon. Okay.
And the second concern is, Councillor Enright, at the end of your speech, you mentioned that you would like that the motion be copied to other councils. Is that an amendment to the motion? To include?
Well, I'm not a member of this committee, so someone on this committee would need to amend it.
Yeah, but that is your request, yes.
Okay. We'll Councillor Hannah, you're in there with a question. Councillor Hannah.
Thanks, Chair. Question directed at Collie Jackson there. After listening to what Councillor Enright has said, I know I built a new house here about 4 or 5 years ago, and the amount of insulation, that was colossal. I just followed whatever building regulations or building control had sent out. Are we that far behind those in the Republic of Ireland and in GB? It's a simple question. Are we far behind them? Are we just about the same? Are we miles behind them? That's what I'm asking you, Colin.
Okay. Look, it's not just the amount of insulation that goes into a house to make it energy efficient. It's the type of fuel that we use, the efficiency of a boiler that we use, the amount of air leakage out of a dwelling, and there's air pressure tests that are required for the working out the energy rating of a house. So an air rating of, say, for example, 2 would be far higher than an air rating of 4, and it's air permeability out of a house. So whenever you're designing a house now, you have to design it in such a way that it's going to give you a pass rating. And then there's a test carried out on the dwelling at completion stage to make sure that it's been designed and constructed the way that it was supposed to, and that it hits the rating that was initially proposed at design stage during the construction phase, to make sure that nothing has been left out or omitted. There is only so far you can go in relation to upgrading insulation, because the insulation, if you put, say, for example, 300 mil of insulation in your roof space and you decide to upgrade that to 400 millimeters in the future, it'll give you a slight reduction in energy rating, but it may not be as efficient as, say, for example, providing a boiler that is more efficient than a boiler that you had initially proposed. So when you there's only so much you can do as far as insulation and constantly thickening up and thickening up and thickening up insulation. And the manufacturers are well aware that, you know, to increase the thickness of insulation is not always the solution. That you have to look at the whole package. It's air permeability, the efficiency of boilers, and also the insulation, but also leakages around windows and those sorts of things, where you could draft around doors and windows and all that leakage. All that has to be taken into consideration whenever you're designing a building and when you're going to look at the running costs in the future.
Chair, can I just follow up with something? Collie, you haven't really answered my question. You went through a load of different things there. So you have, I have a high efficiency boilers in my house. I have solar panels on the roof there to heat the hot water, which are a great job, because I don't need to have the boiler on from May through to the end of September. But you still haven't answered my question there. Are we far behind? Are we far behind the Republic of Ireland and GB in the standards of efficiency in our houses?
The difference in us and them is that the vast majority of our houses, yours might be different in that you have already provided solar panels on your house. The difference in lots of those others in the Republic of Ireland and England, that they may be already a requirement of their regulations, where that's not the case in Northern Ireland at the minute.
So you may have
gone overboard when you were designing your house at the time and building your house at the time. That was not a requirement at the time, but that's something that may be a requirement in the future.
So you still haven't really answered my question properly. Sure, are we far behind the Republic of Ireland and GB?
It's hard to quantify that as a yes or no answer. I would say we are behind them, but it's hard to quantify how far we are behind them. I do know that our regulations should have been upgraded in 2014, and the minister at that time decided not to, and therefore in England and in the Republic, they have moved on two occasions to update their legislation, where we have not done that. The intention is, with the latest upgrade in our regulations, is to leapfrog what they have done in two previous upgrades.
Okay.
Well, is there any idea when we will actually be caught up then and have these regulations in place? Because especially in new builds, it's easy done in a new build. You're only talking about maybe a few thousand pounds more to actually do it.
Yeah, the The department are working on an upgrade of our regulations at the minute. They've told us that they are working on that at the minute. The minister knows that he has then to go out to consultation on those upgrades. And after that consultation, then they'll roll it out to ourselves to enforce. And we will be given a go live date in due course. I cannot see that happening within the next maybe 6 to 9 months, because the department are already working on other upgrades of other regulations, and one of them is in relation to fire safety, and it was in relation to the Grenfell Tower about removing flammable material from the outside of buildings. That was seen as the department's priority, and they are working on that one at the minute. That one's going to come into enforcement prior to the Part F regulations, which is the conservation of fuel and power. So I would suggest that it more than likely be 6 to 9 months down the line before any regulation would, in relation to conservation of fuel and power would be rolled out. Having said all of that, if you are designing a building now or submitting a building control application now, you have to comply with the NZEB regulations. So you have to meet the target emissions rate now, and therefore to allow building control to approve your application.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Jackson. Thank you. Can we actually be brief, Mr.
Can I come in there? I think we're going off piste, for the want of a better expression here.
I think you're right.
I would rather the focus was on the content of the motion in front of members, and if we focused on that, for the benefit of the councillors who have presented and put the motion in front of the committee tonight, I would rather that we maybe try to focus on that specific notice of motion. Thank you.
I think so. Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor Tennelly.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. That's a very sobering contribution from Councillor Enright, and I would suggest your average layperson actually wouldn't have a notion that that our current regulations are behind both the Republic of Ireland and GB. Now, being very blunt about this, Chairman, if somebody put this to the minister 7 years ago, they done that at the time because we were behind at the time. 7 years have now elapsed in the interim period. We don't know why it was mothballed in 2014, but what I actually took out of what Colly said was, and my apologies if I'm misinterpreting, wouldn't be the first time I've done that, but the current departmental advice nearly seems to be how to get round certain stipulations and requirements to meet certain targets, as opposed to putting the requirements elsewhere into practice. So I fully support Councillor Brown's through Councillor Enright's motion, and I propose here that we accept it, including the amendment that we put this out to all our councillors, or all our councils. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Councillor Tenley. And that would be the Councillor Enright's amendment to write to the councils also put forward. So that's proposed and seconded. Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor McAteer, you're in for a question.
Just a quick comment, just and maybe to Cadogan. Cadogan, would you be in agreement that really to bring this to a proper standing, that you would really need something equivalent to a Green Deal be brought in by central government that's similar to that available in GB at the moment, to be able to address this properly? Because, you know, we do see here where it's going to, you know, it will potentially cost any builders or someone building a house quite a lot of money, really, to bring it all in.
Well, to answer that, Chairperson, yes, we do need a Green Deal, but the Green Deal is a separate issue. I mean, the Green Deal in Great Britain is primarily going to be tackling those buildings built before 1990, before the Energy Code, Part F, I think, started to be improved. Because of the rapid population growth in the Republic and the large amount of building down there, looking forward, the Green Deal isn't going to apply to maybe one-third of their buildings, because they've all been built in recent years. So what I'm trying to do with this motion is to ensure that whatever houses we built this year won't have to go through a retrofit from a Green New Deal, but only the old houses that were built historically will have to have that cost attached to them. So what I'm saying is that we're three regulations behind. Were we to adopt the latest regulations, we would make the Green New Deal less expensive because there'd be fewer houses that would have to be tackled as part of the climate change initiative that the UK government has targeted. Does that explain?
Yep, I think it makes sense, Councillor Enright, in the sense that you're supportive of a Green Deal, and this is sort of a way to exploit that. So it's been, as far as I can tell, is there anybody else to speak? If there's nobody else to speak, are we content that the motion passes as is, including the amendment from Councillor Tinley? Okay, that's okay. Councillor Enright, do you wish to sum up at all? I mean, granted that we've had quite a lot of detail in this regard, so...
We have a 30-second sum up then. Councillor Hannah's point directly, yes, we are about three regulations behind the GB and Ireland, and his point is quite correct. It's far easier to get it right when you're building a house and far less expensive than a retrofit. Now, these regulations wouldn't force anyone who's already got a house built to do retrofit their house, but what it would do, it would make sure that the house was built correctly in the first place, so when the Green New Deal comes down the track, their house won't have to be retrofitted. Now, we don't know when this Green New Deal is going to start or when the British government's going to start giving the money for that Green New Deal, but basically, if like Councillor Hannah has done, if you built your house properly in the first place, you won't have that expense, and the government won't have the expense of having to retrofit to get it up to 2030 or 2050 standards. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Enright. I think sums that up nicely. So we've had quite a lot of house building and future-proofing houses discussed. So if we can move on to item number six. Item number six is the Carlingford Lock Greenway site investigation, and that is being taken by Mr. McGilley. Mr. McGilley, thank you.
Chairman, as members will be aware, this project has been implemented in part, and we're currently working with our partners in Louth Council to implement the southern section of the Greenway. Chairman, the recommendation this evening in front of you is that we approve the business case to complete the necessary site investigations. Those will be funded at 100%. Through the Interreg funded programme, and also that the Council consider provision in the capital estimates for 2021-22 around the necessary procurement of additional lands to facilitate the section from Victoria Lock to the border, Chairman. So those are the recommendations tabled this evening for the committee to consider.
Thank you, Mr. McGilley. And that's proposed by Councillor Stokes and seconded by Councillor McGrew. And a quick question from Councillor Tinley. We'll come back to sort of for the matters of the record in a second. So, Councillor Tinley.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Johnny, just within the report, it indicates that there's one landowner sort of not on board. So, are we into a vesting situation? And what is the process there?
That'll take its natural course through the SPR committee, but that's been dealt with through the legal or league council's legal team.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. McGilley. Councillor Stokes, are you happy to propose?
Yes, Chair. And just to say, I spent quite a bit of time over the holidays, Chair, on both sections, both the Neary Domeath and the Omeath to Carlingford. Really well used runners, walkers, cyclists, great to see, and it'd be great to see this complete, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Stokes. Councillor Mulgrew, you happy to second for the matter of the tape, etc.?
Happy to second for the tape, and also to echo Councillor Stokes' comment. It has been a fantastic
piece of work so far, and we need to see it through to the end. Absolutely fantastic asset. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I must say, I have been down parts of that to the Greenway, and yeah, it's beautiful, beautiful place. Okay, item number 7 is the EDRF COVID response, and this is being taken again by Mr. McGilley. Mr. McGilley.
Yes, Chairman, as part of the discussions with central government around the COVID response through led by SOLAS, Chairman, InvestNA had made available to councils or give the opportunity to councils to do to put together a collaborative bid, Chairman, for funding in the coming financial year to support business, Chairman, following some research and assessment of existing programmes for business support that are in place. The proposal this evening is to submit an application to the Department to InvestNA for a digital support programme, Chairman. This would complement Council's current digital programme, which is aimed at getting businesses introduced to the whole digital scene. This programme that we're proposing to bid for would be taking businesses to the next stage, putting together an innovation roadmap and engaging much more with businesses as to how they can use the digital platforms to support their business, Chairman. It would be across all 11 councils, and we're seeking approval this evening to submit the funding application for next financial year and to include in draft rate estimates funding for the next two financial years to roll that out, Chairman, at a cost of £25,000 for the council, each council, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McGilley. I have a proposal in the seconder. I'll take in the questions here first. Councillor McAteer.
Yes, Chair. Yeah, I was just wondering, I'm not familiar with this or speaking about it, but can businesses that are affected by COVID and, you know, those who have to attempt to diversify, can they participate in this and take, you know, up the opportunity to, you know, learn a bit more about the digital world out there if they're trying to diversify in this?
Well, suppose, Chairman, that would be the intention of the programme, subject to the bid being successful. We already have a programme that is targeted at that at a much lower level, Chairman. So if there are businesses that we could maybe deal with those, if Councillor Market here wanted to signpost them to us now, we can deal with those. But that would be the plan around this programme. But it's taking businesses to the next level. It would be businesses that would have some idea of digital. This is really giving them a plan as to how they would develop their business around digital platforms.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. Thank you, McAteer. Councillor McGree, a question, I presume. thank you, Councillor McGree.
I have to put on record again, every time we come to these types of items, that within spitting distance of where I am, there's an enterprise centre, and the connectivity there is rubbish. No matter what we do, unless the basics are installed, our businesses in certain areas are still hugely disadvantaged. And I absolutely welcome everything that we can do to support businesses at this particularly difficult time. And the businesses that have been able to use Digital Forum have, you know, are holding their own. But there are others that, until necessary infrastructure and provision is put in place, will always fall behind. And that has to be a priority. And that is borne out because I'm the only one on Monaghan Road tonight in a room where the light keeps going off every 5 minutes because there's nobody moving in it. But if I want to join a council meeting, that's what I have to do. The injustices of life here. But so there are businesses that will always lag behind. And in this day and age, it's utterly unforgivable. It's as basic a necessity as water and electricity.
Thank you, Councillor Mulgrew. And I think there's an item for note regarding Project Stratum, which might touch on some of that, I'm not sure. Councillor Stokes, proposing Councillor Stokes.
I'm going to propose, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Stokes. Councillor Savage, Councillor Savage.
Yes, Chair, happy to second that and to echo the sentiments of Councillor Mulgrew, particularly in rural South Armagh and South Down. There are big challenges, but we hope that the item that's coming up later, Project Stratum, will help to try and alleviate some of that infrastructure issues that we have to deal with. But I think it's a very welcome step forward, and a lot of businesses will get great benefit out of it. And if anything, COVID has taught us, it's about how to move into the digital age and move quickly. So happy to second it, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Moving on then, item number 8 is regarding Forkhill Farmer Barracks. Mr. McGilley?
Chairman, what is tabled this evening is an update report with task and finish, a report on the project development, Chairman, for noting. However, as councillors will be aware, there has been some delay in progressing the development of the remainder of the site caused largely by COVID. That is progressing. However, as a result of that, we're seeking approval to extend the licence agreement currently on the site between both the council and the AFC and the council and the local parish around access from the church car park until such times as the remainder of the site site development is finalised, Chairman. So those are the key recommendations this evening in the report.
Thank you. Councillor Stokes, you down at the first P, Councillor Stokes?
Have a proposed here, yeah.
Thank Martin, you. Councillor Mulgrew?
Sorry, I'll be second.
Thank you, Councillor Mulgrew. Okay, moving on, item number 9 is the Southern Regional College Big Apprenticeship event. Mr. McGilley again, thank you.
Chairman, as councillors will be aware, we are working with all of the both SRC and SERC in terms of skills and education development and all these educations across the district. However, we're seeking approval this evening to enter into a service level agreement with SRC to jointly promote the big apprenticeship event this year, scheduled for April 2021. Chairman, the aim of the programme is to promote apprenticeships, both traditional trades but also higher level apprenticeships as an alternative route to employment. Chairman, this follows on the back of a very successful event last year where we had a similar engagement with over 34 employers involved and over 500 attendees, Chairman. So the event would probably take a much different format than it would have last year, given the current climate, but we were putting in place this funding agreement with the college to move this forward, Chairman. So that's the recommendation that we're seeking approval for this evening.
Thank you, Mr. McGilley. We have our proposers and seconders. I'll just take in Councillor Riley and the other questions first. So, Councillor Riley.
Thanks, Chairman. Jonathan, I was wondering, employers here, including the council, pay the apprenticeship tax to the Exchequer in London, but we're the only part of the UK that hasn't been able to take advantage of it. And I was wondering, can you give me any update on that? Because it would involve quite significant amounts of money for local employers to fund additional apprentices. And it's something that we shouldn't really sit back on, as we have been. Thank you.
Chair, maybe I can comment on that. That's probably something that I can pick up with the Director of Finance, because Dorena would be more across how we get access and what the likelihood of getting access to that apprenticeship levy is, and I can come back to the committee or come back to you directly, Councillor O'Reilly, if that would be okay.
That would be great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Mr. Mallon, and thank you, Councillor O'Reilly. Yep. Councillor Savage?
Yes, Chair. It's just really to pass comment on this, and that this was an excellent event last year, and one of the discussions we've had with SRC for their expansion plans, apprenticeships are very much central part of their focus going forward. And hopefully as SRC does expand and become the 21st century centre of education and further education and higher education that we want it to be, that the apprenticeships will become very much part and parcel of that. This is about creating opportunities for our young people so that they're not heading away to America, Australia and other parts of the world. That was all brought home during COVID, where so many people couldn't get home to see their loved ones at Christmas or during the summer because of it. And that's because a lot of the young people emigrated to get their opportunities abroad, where they think this can give us an opportunity to skill
and train our young people to the highest level in the new 21st century technologies as well. And I think it's something that has to be very much welcomed, and I'm very much happy that the council is staying involved and joined at the hip with the SRC on this project.
Thank you, Councillor Savage. Councillor Clark?
Yeah, Chair. Chair, just to agree with previous speakers in regards to, you know, how successful this event was last year. But also, I would say that this is one of the most important initiatives, you know, that we're dealing with tonight. You know, this is about young people, about apprenticeships, and obviously going the vocational route instead of the academic route. And there's a great demand for tradespeople moving forward as well. You know, so I think it's important that the apprenticeships are boosted in this manner and promoted in this manner, particularly in relation to even stuff we were talking about earlier in regards to green technologies and that. You know, there's a real need to be training people up in these new technologies. You know, even talk about electric vehicles and that, you know, you need to change how you service these cars, how you look after them, you know. So from that point of view, I think there's great opportunities for us in regards to the renewable energy industry and green technologies, including retrofitting. We had a good discussion on that as well. So welcome it greatly. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. So just for the purposes, Councillor Hyle, you happy to propose?
Yeah, happy to propose.
And Councillor Curran, can you second?
Yes, Chair, I'm very willing to second this. I think this is a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful platform, and I look at it from for school leavers to be informed, you know, of apprenticeships, and also for employers to promote what job vacancies they can be. And as already said here, you know, with all the other comments that have been said tonight here, you know what I mean, this is an opportunity maybe for jobs now in the trades, which had diminished there over the last number of years they got there. So I totally support it.
Thank you, Councillor Curran. Thank you, councillors. Okay, moving on. It's item number 10, which is the Warren Point Front Shore. Public Grant Scheme. Mr McGilley, thank you.
Sorry, Chairman. Yeah, Chairman, the report of the Task and Finish Group in relation to the proposed Front Shore Scheme at Warren Point has been tabled there this evening as part of this report. The key recommendations are is that the Council adopt the design concept and move forward with the consultation process in the now, Chairman, following on from as a result of this, the recommendation of this meeting, that Chairman, that as part of that, we now submit the economic appraisal and proposal to DFC for the additional funding that the scheme has been designed around. That we approve recommendations, we approve the business case for the site investigation surveys that will inform the detailed design, and that we convene a meeting. I think it is actually planned to happen next week in relation to the proposed DFA One West system, Chairman, so that we can conclude that matter ASAP. Chairman, those are the key recommendations from the report that has been attached, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. McGilley. Councillor McGilley here, propose?
Yes, sir. Certainly, Chair, I'd be happy to propose it. And just to emphasise that the public will have an opportunity in the very near future to view and comment on the proposals. When we met back before Christmas there, you know, we made small comments, small amendments to it, which will hopefully be brought to the table as well, and people will be able to look at this and see that we'd also be able to see the benefits as well of the first stage of the public realm scheme at Warren Point, and hopefully this will lead to an even bigger success. I'm not too sure certainly about the proposed one-way system as is currently proposed, so I need to caution against that, and I do that will be consulted on as well, and I do think that from the point of view of the public, they need to look at this very, very carefully in tandem with the new realm scheme to make sure that it actually all will work in tandem together. But in proposing that, I would just say to people, look out, make sure to come on board, and whenever form is done in, and to have your views on it, and also on the one-way system as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor McAteer, and thank you, Councillor Rand, very conscientiously changing your PDNS. So thank you, Councillor Ann. Can you come in second, Councillor Ann? Thank you.
Second, Chair.
Okay. Okay. Moving on then. Number 11, which is the framework for accommodation catering venue hire. And Mr. Patterson is taking this. Thank you, Mr. Patterson.
Yeah, Chair. Each year, council has a requirement to book venues for different conferences, meetings, awards, ceremonies, and tourism events. So it's the requirement, following a review of the spend across council and the levels of spend, in order to follow best practice in terms of procurement, we're required to put a framework in place. And the process of this framework will be to invite accommodation providers and those that operate conference venues, etc., will be invited to apply to be on a restricted list. And then many competitions will be held then as a second phase whenever specific requirements come up, similar to chairman's awards or specific events. Sports awards would be another one. Tourism conference would be another. So that's the process. The paper is seeking approval for a framework to be created. It's just to say, Chair, also, the types of providers that would be invited on to apply for the framework would include larger hotel providers, but could also include smaller venues that provide unique types of accommodation or specific services in different areas. So could include B&Bs, self-catering, meet and hire venues. So there's no limit to the range of types of providers that could be included on there. So the paper's seeking approval for that framework.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Councillor Savage?
Yes, Chair. It's just really touching. I think Avian has touched on some of that. Just really, you know, it's very important, I think, that whatever we do as a council in relation to holding events, that we get a wide and varied spread across the district, with some of our smaller providers get an opportunity to host events, that their tourism product, their venue product, is as much appreciated as some of the big venues, because when it comes to some of the big venues, the competition there will look after itself based on the logistics that's required to host certain big events. So the number of venues that can apply for the right to host those events will be limited to the bigger venues. So I think it's very important when we draw this up that we look at horses for courses effectively, and where we have smaller events, we should be looking to some of our smaller venues on a regional and geographical spread across the district. And I know that practice does go on, but it's something that I would very much like to see continue, so especially coming out of the pandemic and the hit that our tourism sector has and our venue sector has been hit with. So I'd hardly propose it on the basis that we do very much focus on making sure that we spread it out and encourage as many of the smaller venues to get involved in the process and see that they are open for application to get involved. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Savage, for proposing that. Mr. Patterson, do you want to follow up just and sort of give some clarity to Councillor Savage about how it sort of is a widespread of venues is sort of taken into consideration? Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, the proposal would be that the framework could have different bands within which different types and sizes and scale of accommodation or conference venues, etc., would be included. One example would be often incoming media visits. Journalists from different countries would sometimes specify that they want to stay in a B&B or a unique self-catering location. So the framework would allow us to, go through the restricted list and allow us to do a mini competition amongst smaller scale accommodation providers. So that would be the case. There's different bands in which the different sizes of venues would be placed to allow us to do procurement of those types of venues.
Yeah, happy to propose on that basis, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Thank you, Councillor Savage. Councillor McAteer. Councillor
McAteer. I just a question just to Annie, just to seek assurances that that this would maybe only for the greater or larger events, that, you know, some of the normal hospitality events that we would hold as a council, you know, when, especially when we get back to normal, that that wouldn't be deflected away from the local providers that maybe are currently get a wee turn, as they call it, you know. But so it's just to seek assurances in that one, and to make sure then that, of course, that it's not a big, you know, a case of winner takes all in this, that the big boys come in and grab it all, and that we go back to our policy, which I think was agreed upon on different motions the last number of months, that we would be there to support and attempt to support small local businesses, you know. So
no, that'll be through the chair. That'll be very much the case, that we would seek to use as many, as wide and varied a range of venues as possible, including small venues up to large. You know, we work very closely with the providers such as the likes of Cleavey Castle, Sleeve Donard, Burndale, but also work equally as well with the smaller providers, especially new types of accommodation and venues that come on. So the framework would allow us that flexibility. It just means that from a procurement perspective, we are following best practice and we're staying within the procurement policy guidelines.
Yeah, but Andy, it won't, sorry, but Chair, to come back in, it won't actually knock out, you know, the small suppliers that would supply refreshments for, you know, for small meetings or whatever, or events or presentations or whatever may happen or may take place. Is that right?
Through the chair, this framework is really for the likes of events, conferences, seminars. It's not really for smaller scale catering needs as such. So that is outside the terms of this framework.
That's great. Thank you for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Thank you, Councillor McAteer. Councillor Riley. Councillor Riley.
No, it's okay, Chairman. I got clarification there from another question.
Okay, that's great. Councillor Hannah, then, are you just content to second then, please, Councillor Hannah?
Yeah, Chair, I'm happy to second it there, and I echo everything Councillor Savage has said. A couple of wee things there, could I ask Andy? Just those who would be registering on the list, would the council be reaching out to them, or would you be expecting them to come forward yourself? And it's a massive asset there to be able to showcase all our smaller businesses too there that would be capable of doing this in smaller types of events. So I do honestly think that we do need to really reach out to them. So what I'm saying to you is, Andy, will we be proactively get out and looking for these? Are you expecting these venues to come and register with us?
Through the chair, I can confirm we'll be advertising this heavily, Glenn, and making sure that all the providers are aware. So we'll send the information out through our own tourism database of tourism businesses. There's quite a few hundred on that database, and then we'll be advertising it as well in local press and social media. So as many providers as possible, we'll be trying to make them aware of this this framework.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Myself, do apologise. Item number 12 is the DERA Collaborative Programme. And item number 12, yeah, DERA Collaborative Programme. And this is, the notes fail me. I assume this is Mr. Patterson again, sorry.
It is indeed, Chair, yeah. So in October, committee members approved the recommendation to submit a bid into DERA for the Rural Tourism Collaborative Experience Programme. The programme's aimed at creating new tourism experiences and offerings in rural areas based on our unique selling points. We've been successful in that bid, and the next opportunity or the next requirement is to appoint a suitably experienced facilitator to work with the businesses, the food producers, the distilleries, and all our food and drink providers to develop the program and develop these experiences. So really we're seeking approval to appoint that provider. Just to note, the facilitator facilitator will undertake market research as well, looking at the opportunities for food and drink tourism experiences to be developed and to attract international tourists back in to the district when we get opened up again. So all the details are included in their chair in the paper.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. And Councillor Clark, are you happy to propose?
Yeah, Chair, I'm happy to propose just a few words, Chair. Just in regards to the high quality of food that we do have in our region. And it's about showcasing that, you know, for the visitor. Developing the experience, also as Andy has outlined. Great experiences, you look at the seafood that we have to offer our farming community. But developing in a collaborative way is a really important way. Developing the trails, the food trails, is essential. There's a number of breweries, distilleries, food producers, you know, so it's about linking all them up, and I think it's an excellent project as well. So you're trying to build the authentic experience for the visitor, and a good part of that is the food and drink element. So happy to propose, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And funny, in second of Willie's proposal, again, it's something I feel very strongly about as well. I think this is a tremendous opportunity to focus. First of all, congratulate actually our council officers in acquiring the £50,000 funding. I think, again, I must commend everybody on doing exactly what we're trying to do in terms of broadening our whole offering in terms of food production and that side of the tourism sector. But I think it's an opportunity to focus more directly on what we're trying to achieve in terms of the promotion, recognition and the engagement with our growing artisan producers. And I think that a facilitator will be able to concentrate more deeply and concentrate and definitely on and invest the time and the expertise to grow that particular sector further. So I think it's a great step this forward, you know, and happy to second it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Councillor McAteer. Okay, so moving on. Items 13, Analong Harbour, North Pier Wall Restoration. Item number 14, Closing Order Appeal, Bay of Bengal. Item number 15, Car Parks Future Service Provision are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of Part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland, 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may, by resolution, be excluded during this item of business. So if I could call for a proposer and a seconder. So, Councillor Riley, can you propose, please? Or not? Is that okay?
She'll propose, Chairman.
Oh, thank you. And then Councillor Hannah, thank you.
Happy to be a second, Chair.
Okay, so just take a wee second then while the press, and then if someone gives me the heads up when I can proceed.
Chair, you can go ahead. The press has left.
Are we press free?
Yeah, I just invited them back in. Maybe if you give it just a minute.
No worries, yep.
No one's wanting chairs, so you can proceed.
Okay, thank you. Item number 13, Analong Harbour, North Pier Wall Restoration, on the proposal of Councillor Riley, seconded by Councillor Hannah. It was agreed. Council approved the business case for the Analong Harbour North Pier project and issued the relevant purchase orders to contractor and consultant. Council include the necessary funding towards the Analong North Pier project within the capital programme for 2021-22 and seek funding through FLAG Fisheries Local Action Group. Item number 14, Closing Order Appeal, Bay of Bengal. On the proposal of Councillor Mulgrew, seconded by Councillor Stokes, it was agreed on the basis of the advice received, I would recommend that members agree to amend our closing order to permit the premises to open to 1 a.m. from Friday to Sunday and close premises at 12 midnight on weekdays, and that they only provide a self-closing device on the external door. Item number 15, Car Parks
future service provision. On the proposal of Councillor Stokes, seconded by Councillor McAteer, it was agreed to officially inform DFI of our intention to test the market and seek options outside the current agency agreement for the service delivery of the off-street parking enforcement contract post-October 2022. And that is, those are those items. So, moving on. The following items are for noting, and just going through them, I say I've raised some issues with them to the relevant officer to be noted. So if any, I'll go through them here. Item number 16 is dog euthanasia. Declan. And item number 617 is the update regarding Project Stratum. Declan McAteer.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, having just read that report and just observed, you know, certain things in the area with papers, etc., I think, Chair, would it be possible to invite them along to give a presentation to Council on exactly what they're doing in the area and where they're doing it, more importantly. And, you know, maps, etc., about the areas that that they're moving in on. Because they're certainly using the current infrastructure, and they say that in the report, piggybacking on that, certainly. So I want to be able to see from them what actually new work they're doing it and where they're doing it. And just that it gives a wee, like, at the moment, at this moment in time, I'm getting phone calls from people who maybe both parents are working from home. Children are now having to do schooling at home, and there's a big pressure on the whole broadband infrastructure, which is terribly weak in rural areas anyhow. And I'm sure we won't have it all corrected by then, but at least we would know to be able to report back to people exactly what's happening. This is a very complicated issue, you know, when you start talking about broadband and broadband providers and the different permutations of it all, how it all works. So I think it would be very useful and helpful if they were able to come along and give a presentation and answer questions, Chair.
Mr. Mallon, is that something that we could endeavour to do?
Yes, we can engage with the provider and ask them when they're in a position to provide detailed plans for when they're going to move into our villages and towns to come and present to committee. I'm happy to do that.
Is that's answered your query and fulfilled it?
Exactly what I want. Yeah, great.
Okay, thank you, Councillor McAteer. Thank you, Mr. Mallon. Item number 18, Rural Villages Consultation. Item number 19, Brexit Forum Action Sheet. Okay, Councillor Andrews, you have a question. I'm not quite sure. Was it the Brexit Forum or was it the previous?
Actually, Chair, thanks so much for your indulgence. It actually was under the previous agenda item number 18 on the village plans and all. First of all, I'd like to welcome and thank all the officers and the various agencies involved in pulling the paperwork together. Just a question to the officers would be in relation to the plans that are on the paper. What progress has been made so far, or what are the next steps that will be taken to implement a lot of the proposals that have been outlined in those development plans? Thank you.
So, Chairman, I answer that if you want. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. McGilley, thank you, please.
So, Chairman, the plans were developed on the basis of discussions with DFC, given their anticipated change of thresholds in terms of funding, Chairman, I suppose. The plans are there to inform applications that may come and opportunities that may come forward for funding. So we're not going to be starting just going through every action and implementing them as per the plan. It'll be trying to spot funding opportunities as they come along. However, we have used them already in terms of some of the actions will come forward in the revitalisation plan, the funding to implement some of the actions, some of the minor actions around public realm you'll see coming forward as a result of that funding. So that's the theory behind why we have the plans to inform applications and opportunities as they may arise going forward. there isn't a pot of money per se for each village to implement projects. It's what is the aspirations of the village, and then we try to spot opportunities as time moves forward, along with the local stakeholders as well.
Thank you, Councillor McGilley.
Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Thank you. So, is someone intentionally sharing their screen, or is this a bug in the system? Thank you. Oh. Hello. Okay. Sorry about that. I'm not sure what was going on there.
Technical glitch.
Yeah. Like the matrix, a glitch in the system. Councillor Tennelly, sorry, you had a question down there, and I breezed past you. Apologies for that, Councillor Tennelly.
Thanks, Chairman. No, listen, I want to commend Johnny on indeed the work of Connor Patterson and that as well on the village renewal, particularly my own village. And I must admit, I didn't go through the reports for the other ones, but if one was to start with a blank canvas and come up with all the things have to be done, they're well covered on certainly the ones that I have seen for Strever. Now, here's the issue, Chairman. There's £4.28 million assigned to that list, that wish list, and I think we all are realistic enough to know that we're not going to get anywhere near that in funding. So I think it is important in all these villages that expectations are managed. And when I went to page 3 of the officer's report, it pretty much sums it up. It's the second or third paragraph down under what can be funded. Eligible public realm stroke environmental improvement works can include upgrade work to pathways, street lighting, lampskates, and street furniture. Now, so I think that encapsulates where we are. So my concern would be, Chairman, that we don't want to go down the road of doing micro upgrades all over the place instead of one sort of substantial programme of works. And certainly in Rostrever, I think, or I would love to see the centre of the village get totally revamped under a public realm, and everything else flows from that, that it's not just added in there with the other things. And I mean, like when I'm reading what the stipulation for the funding is, I would think that that's the box that that should be ticked first. But I just think it's important, Chairman, with all these village renewal plans, that expectations are managed when we're going back to the public. Thank you, Chairman, and thanks once again, Johnny.
Thank you, Councillor Tinley. So I think we got as far as item number 19, the Brexit Forum Action Sheet. Item number 20 is the update regarding the artisan markets. Councillor McAteer.
Yeah, sure. Just by comment, but just looked at the figures, and I was just saying, in the worst of times, you know, there was £144,000 went into the pockets of local people there producing local produce. And in the month from July to November, you know, and I just thought that was incredible, and well done to those organising it, and may that continue. Not an inconsiderate amount of money, really, if you take it around with the numbers involved, you know. So I just wanted to bring that to attention and commend the officers all involved, and to encourage more of this again. I know it was dealt earlier, in a sense, through the an earlier item there about the you know, the new person coming in to possibly drive these things on in the same vein, but good stuff there, and good to see that, you know.
Okay. No, I think you're quite right to acknowledge that, Councillor McAteer. Is another insignificant amount of money in the local economy, and something that, as you say, hopefully can be expanded and extended should it be required. Number 21 was the historic action tracker, and item number 22 was the planning performance figures. And if nobody is wishing to make any comment, I will just wish you all the meeting's over. And I do apologise for not wishing you all a happy new year at the start of the meeting, but happy new year. And I think that brings this evening's meeting to a close.